in presenting the story of Cesar Chavez. Ivan and Elsie Vasquez, Bo Bonner Johnson, Norberto Valdez, Loran Stallonis, Rich Salas, Mims Harris, and the entire Cesar Chavez Day Planning Committee. For KRFC News, this is Edgar Allan Reeves reporting.
That's it for this week's Sprouts. Today's show is produced by Edgar Allan Reeves from KRFC Fort Collins. Distribution assistance is provided by Jim Bennett and the Pacifica Foundation. The Sprouts Collaboration Coordinator is Ursula Rudenberg. I'm your host, Debbie Linehart. Tune in to next week's Sprouts, and until then, check us out on the web at www.sproutsradio.org.
Palestine News Network headlines for Wednesday, July 13, 2005. Israeli occupation forces killed a member of the Palestinian National Security in this morning's invasion of Tokkurum. Tokkurum City refugee camp and its surrounding villages are under curfew, while the West Bank and Gaza Strip are completely sealed off. The PA published an official leaflet condemning last night's explosion, while President Abbas also severely condemned yesterday's Islamic Jihad explosion that killed the Palestinian carrying out the operation and four Israelis in Netanya. Prime Minister Kariya said that the PA would try to prevent any further attacks against civilians. After a joint press conference with Correa in Ramallah, head of the European Union Foreign Affairs, Javier Solana, will be in Bethlehem for meetings. Head of Israeli military Mofez reiterated earlier threats that Israeli occupation forces will target Islamic Jihad leaders. The Israeli Prison Administration has told the International Red Cross that it has stopped all visits for Palestinian political prisoners. President Abbas will be in Gaza tomorrow to meet with all political parties. Israeli occupation forces announced closure on all settlements slated for withdrawal for all Israelis not living in them. Tens of Israeli settlers are throwing stones this morning at Palestinian cars at Tafua Crossing near Nablus, having damaged several civilian cars. One British and one Austrian have been reported kidnapped in the mid-Gaza Strip due to a family dispute. And Israeli occupation forces invaded Hossein village west of Bethlehem and took three Palestinians to unknown locations, and also invaded Bethlehem city and took four Palestinians. It is 32 degrees Celsius, 90 degrees Fahrenheit in Jerusalem today, where it will be 24 degrees Celsius, 75 degrees Fahrenheit overnight. And that was a brief look at PNN headlines from Occupied Palestine for Wednesday, July 13th.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. Coming up next, Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. That was Tres Cholas from Grito Serpentina's album. I'm Robert North. This is Bathrop's Pierce Broadsides, and you're tuned to Free Radio, as you may have heard before. You can call into this show. It is a call-in show. 831-427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772. You can also go to the chat room at pagesincolor.com. I am trying to keep an eye on the chat room here if anybody wants to chat. And we're going to be covering a number of things in the next 2 hours. I'm going to be kind of reviewing, kind of looking back to the Wham protest in June at the town clock, looking forward to the next Wham march, which is going to be on Sunday. Wham, of course, is a Women and Men's Medical Marijuana Alliance, or medical, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana. I never quite get it right. But it is coming up, and it's I'd say there's a significant number of pieces of information about interesting news around medical marijuana, as well as I've got an article here by Fred Gardner that I'm going to try to read from the Anderson Valley Advertiser about new findings, even from reluctant sources, showing the effectiveness of medical marijuana, even though the Supreme Court seems to be playing it blind, deaf, and dumb. This march coming up, for those who don't know, although it's being rather widely publicized, I saw it in the Mid-County Post, and I imagine it's going to be, it's getting more publicity in different places as well. It's happening on July 16th, Saturday noon, out on the Pacific Garden Mall, starting at Cathcart and Pacific. I think I got that right. Let me double check. Looking at the press release here on Indie Media, which I suggest as a news source, in spite of the fact that my producer is banned on Indie Media. But nonetheless, a good news source, I think, generally, and I applaud it and I write for it. That is Saturday, July 16th, 12 noon, downtown Santa Cruz. It starts at the corner of Pacific and Cathcart Streets, walking north and proceed to Church Street, then assemble at Santa Cruz City Hall, where a press conference will be held at 1 p.m. And there was some talk on free radio among some of my guests who are care providers for medical marijuana patients and suppliers of medical marijuana. I believe Peter Koch was here from the now-defunct Pacific Coast Cooperative, the club that opened in Santa Cruz right across from the bus station some months ago and then was closed down the day it was revealed to be there in the Good Times story. We also had Andrea Tischler in the studio of the Compassion Flower Inn and Lisa Milano, who recently made the papers, front page of the Sentinel, I guess it was yesterday's paper or the day before, with Greenways, which is a new medical marijuana club, which is looking to open up and has been hitherto blocked by City Attorney John Barisone in a rather cumbersome, pendulous, slow planning commission or planning department process. But now I got a call back from, of all people, Mayor Mike Rotkin, who informed me that he was in Colorado at the time, actually. He informed me that the next city council agenda, which is going to be 2 weeks from last Tuesday, so a week from next Tuesday, July 26th, I believe it is going to have the permit consideration for Lisa Milano's Greenways Distribution Club, and that's going to be in the Harvey West area. And she's been working for a year to get this club going, and I think a lot of us have also been working for a year to get the city council off its duffs, so to speak, to act on this issue. And my commendation to Mayor Rotkin for doing this. It's too bad we can't also see some laws change at the same time, but at least a club opening up, and one that is willing to provide for low-income people, unlike other clubs in the past. I don't know if that's true entirely. I know that I'm not quite sure what the provisions have been for the Maple Street Club when it was open and then the Seabright Club during the brief period when it was open here in Santa Cruz, whether they had a provision for low-income people. Maybe folks who've used that club can call in and clarify what their situation was. But in any case, Lisa Milano on the show, in several interviews with me, has stated that she really wants to provide medical marijuana to people who can't afford it as well as those who can and just are just exhausted and discouraged and tuckered out by trying to get up to San Francisco and Oakland to get medical marijuana, which is still also not available in the second largest city in California, San Jose, amazingly enough. So, again, March starts at noon on Saturday, and that's at Cathcart and Pacific. Wham is doing the marching. A lot of folks are going to be there. I'll probably be there. They're predicting at least 1,000 people. The march is going to be a community solidarity opposing the recent decision of the Supreme Court and of Congress that leaves sick and dying Californians vulnerable to persecution from the federal government. I've also heard rumors that Wham is going to have to make some significant changes in its modus operandi because of the Supreme Court decision. And I'll leave it to Wham to make that announcement itself. But it shows all the more the need for medical marijuana clubs and, indeed, community solidarity around this issue. And critical as I've been at different points of Wham leaders for not taking the lead in the last 5 years to open up medical marijuana clubs or at least to get the city to change its medical marijuana laws, and it still hasn't. There's no indication that Rotkin is doing any changing of those laws. But there is an indication that one club may be allowed to open off in the industrial area. Obviously, not as handy for folks as the Pacific Coast Cooperative was right across the street from the metro. But, you know, a club. at last, a club in Santa Cruz, if it happens. And if Rodkin indeed comes through, as I expect he will, with putting the issue on the afternoon agenda of July 26th. It is going to be a crowded agenda. I believe the party at your peril ordinance is also coming back for some modifications. This issue, today's issue of the Good Times, is a story on the party at your peril ordinance, the law that significantly increases penalties, and we talked about that, for parties, making you vulnerable for police costs if you live there, even if you weren't involved in previous activity, but if there was a party at that house in the last 12 months where police were called, then you are facing responsibility and liability for the neighbor's concerns. If they call the police on you, then you get to pay for the cops if they come, depending on the determination of the police, of course. And I'm actually going to be playing, I think, a significant amount of tape on that. I really found what I heard of the discussion at City Council in June, at the second reading of the Party at Your Peril ordinance, as I call it, interesting stuff. And I was only able to play like 5 or 10 minutes of it, and I thought, this is a done deal, why push it? But since some of it seems to be coming back for potential amendment and modification, to the credit of the City Council and to the credit of the community that's raised the issue so strongly and so loudly, and people like Paul Marcel and Sampson on Free Radio who've done this as well, then I think it's worth bringing up again. And on Sunday, in my longer show, when I have a show from 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to be playing probably about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, of the City Council debate and discussion and the public commentary, 2 minutes each, thank you, Mayor Rodkin, that everyone was allowed. So that's probably coming down the pike. But as I said before, right now it's Wham, and I'm going to play something from the last Wham rally, and again, encourage people to come to the noon rally on Saturday in solidarity with not just one organization at Wham, and not just medical marijuana, but against the drug war generally, against the local prosecution of people under the drug war. Look at today's headline in the Sentinel. It's a major bust on a marijuana grow. So we need to act on this locally. We need to focus on the prosecution locally. It's all very well to talk about how bad the U.S. Supreme Court is, and no one could agree more than I. But where do we have power? Locally. And that's where we have to exercise it. So here's some interviews from the June rally at the town clock. And if you have something you want to bring up, please give a call, 427-3772, or jump on the chat room at www.pagesincolor.com.
Abu Ghraib, consume.
Hang on, folks. The tape is not adequately cued yet, so I'm going to work on doing that, and then we're going to begin it again, and we'll get to it. My apologies for my fumble bumble here. Here we go.
Emblems and their various signs. Abu Ghraib, consume, materialism, support our soldiers, impeach private property.
What I'm reading here is a series of signs that are being held up in a semicircle at the corner of Soquel and Pacific it was either 4 days ago or 11 days ago, a Sunday I believe it was, right outside New Leaf Market. And these are four people, actually there are about six or seven of them, all in a semicircle facing outward with gags on their mouths. And here we go.
Lies and on sale. And all of the folks have black shirts or black outfits pretty much and gags on, or should we say bandanas over their mouths. We may be able to hear something of the message through the bandana. What's going on here?
Essentially, we're just trying to make sure people don't forget what's going on and trying to provide a display so that people can see for themselves the connections between all these things that we're showing here and just derive their own message for themselves.
And how long have you folks been out here standing in this kind of semicircle around your central man holding up the proud emblem of our corporate America?
We've been here for about 15 minutes, but we were here for about an hour yesterday.
And what kind of response did you get yesterday?
A lot of smiles, a lot of people try to flip you off as they walk away, you know, it's mixed messages.
More of one than the other, or?
Yesterday was a lot more smiles.
Well, this is Sunday after all.
Yeah, a lot of tourists around this area too.
Now, are you folks all just sort of individuals that got together, or is there a group that's also involved and represented here?
This is mostly just a group of individuals got together.
And what is your first name?
Scott.
Scott, I see you're talking to us. Even though your bandana keeps slipping down as you speak, and your Abu Ghraib sign, which is all of these signs are neatly stenciled in black on a white placards. This is the first weekend you've done this?
Yeah. It's pretty much a 4th of July expression of our First Amendment rights thing.
Will you be burning the corporate flag?
No, that already happened on Friday.
Ah. Any verbal interchanges with people you think might be of interest to Free Radio?
Not specifically. Well, no, not just, you know, a few passing people shot their comments, but no, most people aren't up for a conversation.
Has the police department issued its solidarity with your message?
No, they just passed by with their usual menacing looks.
And, of course, you know, you're only allowed to be here for an hour in one place. Actually, no, you don't have a display device. You yourselves are the display device.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Did you get any kind of a warning from the ever-vigilant CSO officer, Pam Bechtel?
No warning so far.
She may just either be not on duty today or possibly maybe she's sobered by your message.
I hope so.
Although perhaps a little liquor might not be a bad idea for some of the more repressed police officers. Perhaps not. Let me see if anybody else has any comments. Any comments on this? We have one person shaking his head. Any commentary?
What's the question?
Oh, I don't know. What's your experience been like here today with your sign materialism? And what's wrong with materialism anyway?
What's wrong with materialism? Materialism puts you in a place where you're bound to your material objects. You're focused on the material objects and the more money, must buy, must have, must store, must keep, must hoard. Really, people need to be free, and they need to let go of a lot of that.
And have you had anybody offering to, say, shed their possessions as they walk by, inspired by this protest?
No.
Shed their old notions, their wild fancies, their foolish pseudo-patriotism?
Oh, we are turning some heads and making people think, and that's what we're here for.
And we're talking with?
Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Now, you have a sign that says, support our soldiers. How are you going to be supporting our soldiers with this protest?
Well, I know the soldiers don't want to kill, and it's government who's sending them to wherever. They have to go kill other people, and it is a really difficult issue, I believe, because they can't just leave the country, like, for example, Iraq. Then Iraq will be in, like, in deeper problem, but it is a problem for them to be there. So we have to really think about this issue.
Think about it as more get killed and are killing over in Iraq.
No, like somehow try to eliminate the further sacrifice that soldiers are making and the harm that soldiers are making.
You sound of two minds about the issue. A lot of us just say, get the fuck out of there and get out of there yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, but also, like, I'm concerned about soldiers themselves because I know that many of them are not there because they want to be, but they are just, like, sent there. So I know that they have to go through a lot, too. So.
We're talking with?
What?
Your name is?
Seiko.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. Now, here's an individual who I should recognize. In fact, I think I do, but I'm not going to reveal his identity unless he chooses to do
it.
And Tom Joad, you have a quote from one of your other philosophers. Outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. And for a special bonus, if you can identify who said this quote, a special autographed edition of the Street Shit Sheet.
You bet your life.
I would hope not, but many are. So, Tom, aside from your struggle to avoid the law, I understand you've been
successfully evading the law for the last 65 years, as chronicled in the Grapes of Wrath. What have you found down here that attracts your interest?
The potential for revolutionary capital.
And in, should we say, simpleton's language, how would you translate that?
There's a lot of like-minded individuals here in town who have the potential to become the cadre of the next revolution. Potential, though. It needs work, of course.
Yeah, I don't see them lining up here. Of course, we could also recruit a few people for Iraq. It's a possibility to sign up and head for Iraq, everybody. Doesn't seem to get much of a response.
I do want to offer you a couple of thoughts on this demonstration. It's kind of a think piece here, and that all we have are words, essentially. We're trying to fight the war against language, or the English language, for that matter, and just trying to inject, you know, some kind of meaning behind these words that become so hollow after you hear them so many times, like democracy or freedom. And in the same time, we formed a circle is kind of like a 360 degrees way of making our own stance against global capitalism. It's like our own space we've created right here. It also, I like it to be symbolic of a more, or how about a less Western philosophy, to get away from the linear and Western civilization's way of thinking and try to bring it back to a more closer to the earth type of mentality. Though that may seem pretty abstract. But what else can I tell you? A thing like support the soldiers. If there was space, it should have been support the government soldiers, because that's exactly what they are. The challenge we're putting here is against language, because what you don't see are support the soldiers. You see support the troops, which is a pretty easy thing to get behind with. Troops don't sound as dangerous as soldiers do. If people start thinking about it in terms of government soldiers, they're thinking, okay, well, what exactly are we supporting here? That's just one of some of the ideas we're trying to portray or convey.
Young men and women searching fruitlessly for the weapons of mass destruction, perhaps.
That too. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Tom.
No problem. Take care.
Aha. And you, sir, you have a star in your cap. Is this some sort of commie plot? Aha, private property. Are you attacking our institution of private property?
I suppose so.
Why are you doing that? Don't you realize it's given you all the rights and privileges you have today?
Well, I think we have to try to take a historical approach and look at where private property is derived from, a long legacy of basically the sword and the Bible, right, if you take it back 500 years or so. And but anyway, I don't know.
Fair enough.
Wait, I have one thing to say about this. So, like, we have a lot of kind of disjointed words, right? And I think the thing that's important about what we're trying to do with this kind of theater piece is, like, well, it is basically counter this tendency of, like, social amnesia, right? And, like, one of these patriotic phrases that came up after 9/11 was, we'll never forget, right? But that statement itself kind of, like, negated, like, any kind of historical understanding whatsoever. It's like, we will never forget, but do we have any, like, social, like, memory of, like, the fact that Osama bin Laden was trained by the U.S., right? Do we have any sort of, like, memory of the fact that Saddam Hussein was backed by the U.S.? All these things are forgotten, right? And there's a whole system of forgetting, you know? The media basically plays that role. And erasing, it's like the erasure of history, and like just kind of an attack on social memory and collective memory. So that, I think,
if, trying to jog the public's memory here.
Yeah, I think that, in my mind, from the stuff that we've been doing, that would be kind of the biggest aim here with what we're doing today, I guess.
And we've been talking with
Nestor Makhnow.
Thank you, Nestor, and we hope that your relatives in Ukraine are well. Any commentary, sir, with your lies? And what do you mean by lies? What kind of a comment is that?
How many lies do you know?
Not sure.
I don't have any further comment. Sorry.
Thank you. So, that's the story. And the man in the middle holding the infamous corporate emblem of America, any comments, sir?
Just on the issue of private property that you were talking about earlier,
I believe the Supreme Court made its first attack on private property just the other day. So us asking the question of what is private property is much different from taking it away just to gain tax revenue.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know what's happening. I mean, it's what's happening in our country. It's falling apart.
Do you have any questions?
It's falling apart.
Have any questions?
Yeah.
The
radio.
Yeah. Bush needs to be impeached, like, tomorrow. And if people think we're not over in Iraq for oil, they need to think again. The only difference between him and Tricky Dick Nixon is it's a different cover-up. Same story, same lies, right?
But a Republican majority in Congress.
And Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolkowitz and read about it. And actually, I read where in Mother Earth News, the second meeting they had, this was like in February or March of 2001, before there was a 9-1-1, they were talking about going into Iraq then.
And not so our president.
Oh, yeah, our president, yeah.
Oh, come, surely you jest.
Unfortunately, no, I don't jest. And I think...
What's your name? Where are you from?
Mark Leffler from Modesto, California. I went to Cabrillo JC around 72 and UC Santa Cruz around 75. Been to Humboldt State, 5 colleges. Done a lot of different things. I love Santa Cruz and New Jersey and New York City and Manhattan.
Here, here. That's a mouthful. We're talking to a man sitting in the sunshine here in front of Borders with a cap.
Before we get on to that, just the sharp-eared listeners might have noticed that the Wham interviews that I promised didn't come on. Instead, we had the anti-war stuff, and I apologize for that. But on the other hand, it's interesting, too, and I intended to play it, so my apologies for the shift in position. I do want to give a tip of the hat to Louis LaFortune and others, and the folks at Indy Media who covered the event of the City Council Song Campaign, which is done by Code Pink, ad hoc local group called the Song Campaign, initiated by Code Pink, actually. I'm reading from Indy Media, who petitioned the Santa Cruz City Council with oral communications two nights ago to sponsor a resolution calling for the California National Guard to be brought home from Iraq. And I believe that they're asking that be brought onto the next agenda, which, as I mentioned before, it looks like it's going to be a pretty darn full agenda. And if you want more information, go to Indy Media to check it out. And there's also reporting there that not only describes it, but apparently there's audio and photos as well. You don't have to be lucky enough to catch a quick blurb on the radio or the mainstream or the back of somebody's head. You can actually get a detailed set of photos from folks who take their own time. They don't get paid for it. Putting together local news, and that's the kind that I'm trying to do, too, in my own rather haphazard way. Now... getting back to the a few Wham interviews, let's get on with those. And after that, I'm going to invite some call-ins and see if perhaps we can get an update from Andrea Tischler, although I don't know that she's going to be around tonight. And we'll see what's cooking.
What's your name? Joe, your sign says MakePotLegal555.org, and the other side says Hemp Can Save the Planet. You're the sole remaining sign, though there is somebody over there with a California Bear Republic flag. We've got about 20 people left here, maybe 25. Any comments about what you're going to be doing in the next few days around this issue?
I'm not sure if I heard that first part of your question, but what I plan to do is to stand up for my rights and the rights of everyone else that we have under the Constitution. I think it's time for people to decide to legalize the Constitution. I believe we're all entitled to live free as long as we don't violate the rights of any other people. And so it's an interesting issue regarding marijuana, because it comes down to whether or not we have the right to live in liberty and pursue happiness.
You're here. Thank you, and continue, please. Keep it up.
Thank you, and good luck to you.
All right. Let me start again. We're at City Council. It's about 7:10, and this is a special meeting of the City Council, not the regular meeting, and they don't have to televise special meetings, although it's almost the second Tuesday, but not quite. We're actually on the 7th of June here, talking with Council Watcher Scott Graham. Scott, what's happening here tonight?
Well, the city is basically trying to steal Ron Lau's property from him and give it to their buddies, Bolton Hill Developers. And I probably Dick Wilson and Seal Cirillo get giant kickbacks from Bolton Hill for if they can wrest this property away from Ron.
You, of course, are aware these allegations are slanderous.
No, they're not.
Any evidence that this is the case?
I don't need evidence. It's just what I believe to be real.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of people in the chamber for only one item. I mean, actually, it's certainly a lot, not in the sense of your ordinary council meeting, but we have at least two dozen people in and about the council chambers. Of course, there's Bolton Hill, the developer that wants to do this. There's Ron Lau and his team of counter-developers. And there's intrepid reporter Shanna McCord of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. And a number of other ne'er-do-wells and staff members and so forth. What's wrong with eminent domaining a property that has not been developed for, 16 years, been sitting around fallow or, kind of rotting away? Isn't it an eyesore? Isn't it a blight? Isn't it what the redevelopment agency was meant to do?
Well, for one thing, Ron has brought three other projects forward besides the one he's got in the works right now. And they've all been rejected by the city council for one reason or another. His first project was a hotel which I think is the best project for that space downtown. And it was rejected because he wanted to use part of the parking lot out back that is owned by the city. Well, this Bolton Hill deal does exactly that. Gives that parking lot that is owned by the city to Bolton Hill to use.
That's the group that wants to take it away from Ron.
Well, the city, the redevelopment agency wants to take it away from Ron. Bolton Hill didn't have to approach the city first. I mean, actually, I don't believe Bolton Hill approached the city first. I think the city approached Bolton Hill.
Would that be illegal?
Well, if they write down the Bolton Hill approached them, then that's not illegal. But the whole thing is, why didn't Bolton Hill go to Ron first and say, listen, how much do you want for your property? You know, why didn't they talk to him and say, okay, if you don't want to sell, we'll become partners with you. You own the land, we own the building. You know, we'll share the revenues from this project, da-da-da-da-da. So something is amiss here.
Now, what year was this project rejected by the city council, the hotel project?
It was probably at least 4 years ago.
Can you say two other projects have also been rejected?
Yes. And to me, the onus actually falls on them. Since they've rejected other projects, the onus falls on them for the fact that it hasn't been built on. The other situation is Ron was born and raised in Hawaii, and there's this thing called Hawaiian time, which is not, the fast-paced world of the continental United States.
16 years later.
Yeah, well, so...
After the earthquake.
Yeah, but, I mean, look at how much more valuable this piece of property is now. Well, the other thing is, if you notice in the agenda packet, there's four pictures, all of them of the hole in the ground. They don't show the rest of the two restaurants out back, which Ron owns those buildings, and the little flower shop out back. They don't show those in the picture. They just show the hole in the ground. So somehow they're, trying to skew this whole thing. I think it's a big crock, and hopefully, if they do vote to go through with this, Ron can win in court.
What about the other two projects that you mentioned that were tried and were rejected by the council? Do you have any details on that?
Not really. I just know that at various meetings down through the years, he came forward with other projects, and for some reason, the city council wasn't willing to act on them. I don't know if they have it in for Ron or what, but it's like they were making all this noise about taking Rittenhouse's property at one time. He came forward with plans to build a building there, got a building permit, and now has done nothing. And it's been 4 years since he did that, So his building permit's expired or is about to expire.
Shannon McCord, it's been renewed, and also the reason that Rittenhouse has not acted is because he has got the plans all filed, but he cannot find the appropriate renter or some such thing.
Well, sometimes you got to build a building to find the renter. You can't always get the renter before you build the building. I mean, anybody that builds houses for a living realizes you don't go out and find somebody to buy the house, then build it. You build a bunch of houses and people come and buy them. No, you know, people don't do it. Rittenhouse is putting the cart before the horse. You build a building, you know, it's the old saying, build it and they will come, you know.
Has Ron proceeded to give the city the amount of specific planning and particularity as to what is going to be on his property that Rittenhouse has done for his property? Because I think that was the claim made by Sentinel reporter Shannon McCourt.
Well, the thing is that Ron's property, I mean, he's basically been fast-tracked by this whole process to get something on the table. So I don't know what stage his plans are at, but as far as I know, he's submitted the plans, and so there's an actual plan that's been submitted, which up until the point he gets a building permit can be reworked. And then even after he gets a building permit, he can come in and say, well, we're going to make these changes, those changes, da-da-da-da-da, and change the building in some respects, you know, depending on, you know, unforeseen circumstances or whatnot. But to me, this whole process, you know, the idea of using not only the parking lot out back that belongs to Ron, but also the other half of the parking lot that belongs to the city, that was an idea Ron brought forward. And all of a sudden, the city's all, which the city rejected. They didn't want Ron touching their property. And now all of a sudden, Bolton Hill has carte blanche to use the city property. Something stinks here.
We've been listening to Scott Graham and his typical tirade against our city fathers and mothers. We'll see what happens next. A Ron Lau supporter. Any comments for Free Radio?
No.
Well, you'll be speaking at the mic, so we'll take you there. You say steal is property. We're talking about paying fair market value, right?
Well, according to what was written in the Sentinel, they're offering $1.5 million. 4 years ago, the city paid about $1.5 million for the Lee property and $1.2 million for the Dolphin property for this housing project they built down there. Now, if those properties, one of which is the size of Ron's property, and neither one of which is in a commercial area, if those two properties individually were worth nearly $1.5 million, then his property's got to be, plus the increase in the market over the last 4 years, his property's got to be worth somewhere between $3 and $4 million.
Hence your analysis and use of the word stealing.
Yes. Typically in these redevelopment eminent domain cases throughout the country, what happens is they come in, give people a lowball figure, and take their property, and then the person has to go to court, and whether or not they can get their property back, they can also sue for fair market value, which is often granted by the courts. And many times they're given 2 to 3 times as much as their original offer by the eminent domaining agency.
And you expect this is what will happen in this case?
Well, I would say that if Ron actually has his plans filed and stamped at the planning department by today, and
plans have not been filed, just a pre-application has been filed, according to Shannon McCourt.
Yeah, well, was Shannon there at the office all day long? Was she there till 5 o'clock and knows that nothing got filed by 5 o'clock?
Well, I brought the matter up to Ron, and he kind of, hearing my concern, didn't contradict her statement.
Well, anyway, the whole thing is, even, I don't know what the extent is necessary, but the fact that he's got something on file at the planning department before this meeting, I would think that most judges are going to say the city overstepped their bounds, that they had no right to take his property. Now, I may be wrong. Maybe the city has talked to their...
favorite judge?
No, their higher gun redevelopment attorney up in Sacramento. I believe his name is T. Brent Hawkins. And he's the one that advises them on their redevelopment fiascos usually. And he's probably told them, yeah, go right ahead with it, you know. And if you lose in the local courts, just appeal it. And by the time it gets to Sacramento, you know, one of Ernie's friends can hear the case and, you know, you'll end up winning.
Oh, you cynical guy. Thank you, Scott Green.
Oh, it's about...
It's about time for... something else. I actually, we of course segued from the very end of the WHAM rally into a rather lengthy discussion of the eminent domaining of Ron Lau's property. It's one of the several pieces of property downtown that are still undeveloped. Ron Lau's property, for those who don't know, is the Asian Rose area. It's kind of in the, where all you old timers, where the Bookshop Santa Cruz and the old coffee roasting company used to be. It's now sort of a walk-through area to Chestnut Street and the parking lot back there. I mean, to a Cedar Street and the parking lot back there from Pacific Avenue, kind of parallel with the post office and right across from, Jamba Juice, I think it's called. We've had Ron in the studio talking about the issue. Some of this has to do, why do I bring it up on this show? Well, some of it has to do with abuses by the redevelopment agency, which, of course, is the featured hero. Cecil Cirillo is the hero in the latest Metro story. It's part four of the, development in Santa Cruz or developing Santa Cruz. I haven't read the story very thoroughly. In fact, I've just barely skimmed it, so I won't comment on it. But I've heard, of course, the decision of the city council in June on Ron Lau's property was to eminent domain it, in spite of the fact that he presented architects, backers, plans, and so forth. And then, of course, there was a Supreme Court decision referred to by one of the anti-war protesters a little earlier in the show, which in essence upholds rather extensive eminent domain powers by local city governments. So I don't know what the current status is. If anybody does, who knows, perhaps scope it out. Scott Graham, as I call him, is listening on the air. Perhaps he can call in and give us an update if he has any information. Maybe we'll get an update from Ron. Why is this important? Well, I don't know. For those of you who listen to Ron in the studio, he wants to do some green building, he says, where there's a real kind of a vision and a commitment to conservation for those who are interested in that issue. I don't know that he's terribly concerned with low-income people or, you know, spaces that particularly help them, but I still think it's of interest to us, and of course I had him on because I see it as another example of the city council running roughshod over opponents. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Scott.
Hey, Scott.
So I just wanted to comment on the Supreme Court decision.
Sure.
I don't think it'll have any effect on Ron's property because he did submit an application to build on his property. What this is that the Supreme Court decision was that a city had the right to eminent domain people's property if they could put it to a better use that would generate more money for the city. So since Ron has submitted plans, or Ron's development group has submitted plans, and that's in the works, then which plans are going to create more money for the city, I don't think that'll become an issue for the judges. The fact of the matter is that it's no longer going to be a hole in the ground. And so then it's that Supreme Court decision, I think, won't have any standing in this particular case.
Do you know the status of Ron's case? Has he gone to court yet? Has the redevelopment agency proceeded any further steps in taking his property? I know they voted for it, right?
Well, they voted for it, but that doesn't mean that... See, they have to actually go to court, the redevelopment agency does, to actually make this happen. And so they're probably talking to their lawyer, their redevelopment lawyer that the city uses in Sacramento, and trying to figure out whether or not they have any standing to proceed with this. Because, you know, given the fact that Ron does have a development group together now, and they have submitted plans, that changes the whole thing. The whole dynamic's changed now.
At one point, you suggested that Ron, this may be a sort of a ploy on Ron's part to pump up the value of his property and get a better price from the city. I mean, is that, how likely do you think that is?
Well, if what was presented at the council that night, that Ron has signed a 99-year lease with these developers, and he's out of the picture, then it doesn't matter. I mean, that's no longer an issue either. I mean, the issue now is the city crazy enough to, like, one of the people that was on Ron's team, I think it was a lawyer from Southern California that does redevelopment law, he went up there and said, well, you know, you think you're, this project you got going now is going to be the fastest way to get something built, but it may end up being the slowest way to get something built, meaning that if they end up having to go to court and fight Ron's development group and all this stuff, it may end up taking longer to get something built on that property.
Why should we be concerned about this, or should we?
Well, it's just a, you know, another example of just how arrogant the city is. You know, they're, you know, Ron came in several times with different plans, and the city either rejected them or somehow they fell apart or something. But, you know, the fact that if they have a problem with Ron personally, the fact of the matter is he's out of the picture now. He signed that. He signed his rights to that property over to this development group. So he's out of the picture. So they have to deal with these other people. So if they don't like dealing with Ron,
so, but it's
they don't
the,
have to deal with Ron.
It's the arrogance of the city, you think, that's the issue here. I know we've heard, a lot of us have been concerned about the kind of zippity-doo-dah or zippity-whoosh-and-gone process and such things as the party-at-your-peril law, which I guess is coming up again for some potential modification at the next council meeting.
Yeah, well, that's another thing where the city's, like, going way too far. Because right now, the way the law is, you know, you can actually get a $25 fine for having a loud party if the cops get called back there a second time. You know, like, if they come once, tell you to quiet down the party, and your party doesn't quiet down, and then they have to come back, you can get a fine. Well, this new law, if they have to come back within 12 months, then they can give you a fine. And the fine, I think the first fine is $250, and the second time it's $500. So right now, I mean, if somebody's having a loud party and the cops come back twice to get a $25 fine, it's no big deal. But if people start getting $500 fines, that brings up the specter of, you know, possible retaliation against the neighbors that they suspect called the cops on them.
It also involves paying for police costs as well.
Yeah, paying for the police costs, you know, and more than likely if the cops get called to a party, they're going to come in, you know, eight cars. They might bring an ambulance and a fire truck just to boost up the amount of money that, you know, they're going to be asking for. It's a totally outrageous thing. And the whole thing is that this, the language of this not only applies to houses, but it also applies to all the bars around town and cafes around town that have live music. So if a neighbor, let's say of the Poet and Patriot, calls the cops on the Poet and Patriot or calls the cops on Quimba Jazz Center for being too loud, they can have the same things happen to them.
Well, it's interesting. You're making points that are not made by the fine Good Times article, which came out in today's paper, although it's actually a critical article which seems to express the renter's point of view on this. We are going to be talking about this a great length, or greater length, on Sunday when I'm going to play a lot of the city council meeting debate or discussion or comment on it. Any other thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to mention about this whole redevelopment agency thing that was in the Metro this week. I guess it's a four-part story. And hopefully it'll get to some point where they're actually, you know, talking to people that are critical of the redevelopment agency instead of just talking to people that think it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to the world, you know. Myself, I've been an ongoing critic of the redevelopment agency, and, you know, I've been saying for years that this redevelopment agency needs some sort of commission to oversee it so that they're not working on plans and they come to the city council as done plans, you know. I mean, that's what's been going on for years now. Instead, you know, it would give the community a chance to have input on plans as they're developing instead of, you know, the only time we get input now is when the redevelopment agency presents things to the council as an already done deal.
Does the redevelopment agency play any role in this Measure X situation that has been the subject of significant controversy on which Mayor Rotkin spoke on free radio a couple weeks ago?
No, the redevelopment agency doesn't get that tax money. And see, they're outside of the normal budget. They have their own budget because they get the tax increment money from all the property in the redevelopment zone.
Do they have any stake or interest or position, as far as you know, on the controversy about the tidelands that has come into the paper recently about...
Well, yeah. The redevelopment agency has always been in Charlie Canfield's pocket.
Can you, and very quickly, because I want to roll, but can you give me a kind of a 30-second summary of that tidelands issue?
Well, it's not just the tidelands. It's the entire... area that the boardwalk sits on, plus that parking lot. In 1933, the boardwalk wanted to gain clear title to the land that they sat on. And even though the owner of the boardwalk at the time, Fred Swanton, was also the mayor, they took the city to court and eventually, they didn't actually have a court case. They settled out of court, but they decided to, they gave the city, the city gave title to the boardwalk for all the land on the beach from where the volleyball courts are in front of La Bahia all the way down to the river, then around the corner where that parking lot is. So it's not just the parking lot that's in question here, even though that's what everybody's talking about. The actual 1933 settlement is all of the property the boardwalk sits on and parts of the beach.
I believe activist Phil Baer was talking about, actually filed a lawsuit or made some legal maneuver back in the late 90s to clarify and stop the Seaside Company from continuing its use of that area.
Well, he's the one that brought it to the forefront. Because nobody was aware of the existence of, you know, and see the whole thing that's questionable about that 33 settlement is that the city had no right to give that land away. It wasn't really the city's to give away. It actually was under the State Lands Commission control ultimately, mm-hmm. even though the city has use of it and whatnot. The State Lands Commission oversees all estuary land.
And what has come up recently that's put the matter on the front pages? I'm rushing you because
the Seaside Company is just worried that maybe another radical council will come into play, and even though we've never had a real radical one, but that there might be four liberals on the council someday that will actually want to go after that land. So the Seaside Company, as a preemptive strike, has sued the city over it. But the whole thing is they still have to sue the State Lands Commission because ultimately that's why anything can actually even be done about it is because the state wasn't involved in the first settlement. So the boardwalk's title right now to all those properties isn't secure. They don't have clear title to any of the property that they sit on or that parking lot. So they decided to do a preemptive strike now while they think they have a majority on the city council, and work out some sort of deal before anything bad happens to them.
And is there something coming up at council on this issue that people should be aware of?
I think it's all in closed session. Anything to do with this will be in closed session. Probably the only time that the public will be able to comment on this, other than going to the public comment time during closed session, would be once they have struck a deal with the boardwalk. It'll come in front of the, you know, it'll be done in open session. But everything prior to that will be done in closed session.
So it's the old done deal story.
Unless it actually goes to court. If it actually goes to court, then that, of course, that's a public process.
Well, I'd like to hear more about it, but I'm going to move on, and I appreciate your calling in, Scott. Anything further?
No, that's it, Robert. Have a good evening.
Hey, you too, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening on the net, call-in number, call-in lines are open, 427-3772, area code 831. You can also jump on the chat room at Pages in Color if you want to sound off that way. A couple of comments by my producer on the issue of medical marijuana. She points out that the woman who is doing the Greenways application, Lisa Milineau, in the paper, and who knows, maybe actually opening up a distribution center, is now paying $5,000 a month for her location, hoping it'll open up. And she points out that we may need some protests, like the Huff and Puff protest, the proposed distribution of marijuana publicly, to get some action if this permit doesn't get approved. And she also expresses some skepticism about the Mexican guy with near a small crop, somehow indicating there's a Mexican drug cartel in the story that came out in the Sentinel. We have a call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hey Robert, how are you?
Hey there, Bob.
What new development building height limit would you not oppose in the city of Santa Cruz?
You kind of leave me a little bit behind there. Why don't you state your position?
Let's see here. Now, the tallest building in Santa Cruz would be the Palomar, which is what, 10 stories?
Palomar is 10 stories. Huh.
Something like that.
Really? Huh.
How tall is the Palomar? Maybe even 12.
I don't know. I mean,
I
guess.
I think it's 10.
Really? I always thought it was 4 or 5, but I guess I haven't
Palomar,
been to
Palomar, oh, no, it's way taller.
Really? Really?
The current height limit is somewhere around 4 or 5.
Huh.
Now, I guess I would advocate that Santa Cruz at least examine a 20-story height limit, a 15-story height limit.
Uh-huh.
Why would that be opposed?
Well, I don't know, Bob.
Would you oppose a 20-story height limit?
I have to think about it a bit. I don't know. It's an issue I haven't thought about much. But you know, I'm wondering, does this have anything to do with the previous conversation? Or?
Well, it has to do with redevelopment and development in our fair community.
I may have to rule you off topic and have you arrested, Bob. I'm sorry.
What's that?
I may have to rule you off topic and have you removed from the chambers in chains.
Well, you can certainly do that.
Well,
but I think it's a pertinent question. I think that it's a political hot potato.
Uh-huh.
The Palomar is about twice the current height limit.
So are you suggesting the Palomar should be? This what should be done in your view?
The Palomar could be eclipsed by buildings that are 15, 20 stories high.
Now, are you suggesting that as a proposal or possibility?
Well, I think it should be examined. I don't see where the harm would be, and a great deal of good might come out of allowing developers to build 20-story high buildings in Santa Cruz somewhere.
Okay. Well, let me ponder that one, and who knows? Maybe I'll get back to you on it. But right now, I'm gonna roll onto a couple of my more street side-ish subjects, though.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the call, caller. It's 427-3772. I apologize for kind of ranging far afield, and I appreciate that people have a number of topics they want to express their sentiments on. I am trying to focus on a few topics, which admittedly seem a little often not as closely related as they might be. For example, we were talking about Wham. Here's an article I was actually mentioning it and then played a brief interview and talked about an upcoming event on Saturday, on March. Here's an article in the Anderson Valley Advertiser for July 6th. Dr. Tashkin Concedes Success by Fred Gardner from his Cannabinoids column. Marijuana smoking, even heavy long-term use, does not cause cancer of the lung, upper airways, or esophagus, Donald Tashkin reported at this year's meeting of the International Cannabinoid Research Society. Coming from Tashkin, this conclusion has had extra significance for the assembled drug company and university-based scientists, most of whom get funding from the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse. Over the years, Tashkin's lab at UCLA has produced irrefutable evidence of the damage that marijuana smoke wreaks on bronchial tissue. With NIDA's support, that's National Institute on Drug Abuse, Tashkin and colleagues have identified the potent carcinogens in marijuana smoke, biopsied and made photomicrographs of premalignant cells, and studied the molecular changes occurring within them. It is Tashkin's research at the Drug Czar's office sites and ads linking marijuana to lung cancer. Tashkin himself has long believed in a causal relationship, despite a study in which Stephen Sidney examined the files of 64,000 Kaiser patients and found that marijuana users didn't develop lung cancer at a higher rate or die earlier than non-users. Of five smaller studies on the question, only two, involving a total of about 300 patients, concluded that marijuana smoking causes lung cancer. Tashkin decided to settle the question by conducting a large, population-based, case-controlled study. Our major hypothesis, he told the ICRS, International Cannabinoids Research Society, was that heavy, long-term use of marijuana will increase the risk of lung and upper airways cancers. The Los Angeles County Cancer Surveillance Program provided Tashkin's team with the names of 1,209 L.A. residents aged 59 or younger with cancer, 611 lung cancer, 403 oral pharyngeal cancer, 90 laryngeal cancer, and 108 esophageal cancer. Interviewers collected extensive lifetime histories of marijuana, tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use, and data on diet, occupational exposures, family history of cancer, and various demographic factors. Exposure to marijuana was measured in joint years, that is, joints per day times 365. Controls were found based on age, gender, and neighborhood. Among them, 46% had never used marijuana, 31% had used it for less than one joint year, 12% had used it for 10 to 30 joint years, 2% had used it for 30 to 60 joint years, and 3% had used it for more than 60 joint years. Again, a joint year is your number of joints per day times 365. Tashkin controlled for tobacco use and calculated the relative risk of marijuana use resulting in lung and upper airways cancers. All the odds ratios turned out to be less than one, one being equal to the control group's chances. Compared with subjects who had used less than one joint year, the estimated odds ratios for lung cancer, and then there's a series of stats here. I'm going to skip over to the conclusions. Similar, though less precise, results were obtained for other cancer sites, Tashkin reported. We found absolutely no suggestion of a dose response. The data on tobacco use, as expected, revealed a very potent effect and a clear dose-response relationship, a 21-fold greater risk of developing lung cancer if you smoke more than two packs a day. Similarly, high odds obtained for oral pharyngeal cancer, laryngeal cancer, and esophageal cancer. So in summary, Tashkin concluded, we failed to observe a positive association of marijuana use and other potential confounders. There was time for only one question, said the moderator, and San Francisco oncologist Donald Abrams, MD, was already at the microphone. You don't see any positive correlation, but in at least one category, marijuana-only smokers and lung cancer, it almost looks like there was a negative correlation, i.e. a protective effect. Could you comment on that? Yes, said Tashkin. The odds ratios are less than one almost consistently, and in one category that relationship was significant. But I think that it would be difficult to extract from these data that the conclusion that marijuana is protective against lung cancer. But that is not an unreasonable hypothesis. Abrams had results of his own to report at the ICRS meeting. He and his colleagues at San Francisco General had conducted a randomized placebo-controlled study involving 50 patients with HIV-related peripheral neuropathy. Over the course of 5 days, patients recorded their pain levels in a diary after smoking either NIDA-supplied marijuana cigarettes or cigarettes from which the THC had been extracted. About 25% didn't know or guessed wrong as to whether they were smoking the placebos, which suggests that the blinding worked. Abrams requested that his results not be described in detail prior to publication in a peer-reviewed medical journal, but we can generalize. They exceeded expectations and show marijuana providing pain relief comparable to gabapentin, the most widely used treatment for a condition that afflicts 30% of patients with HIV. After Abrams' presentation, a questioner bemoaned the difficulty of, quote, separating the high from the clinical benefits. Abrams responded, "I'm an oncologist as well as an AIDS doctor, and I don't think that a drug that creates euphoria in patients with terminal diseases is having an adverse effect." His study was funded by the University of California's Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research. The 15th annual meeting of the ICRS was held at Clearwater, Florida, Hilton, June 24 through June 27. Almost 300 scientists attended. R. Stephen Ellis, MD of San Francisco, was the sole clinician from California. Medical student Sunil Agrawal, pharmacy operator Mike Omaha, and therapist cultivator Pat Humphrey showed up to audit the proceedings. Some of the younger European scientists expressed consternation over the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling and the vote in Congress reinforcing the cannabis prohibition. How can they dispute that it has a medical effect? An investigator working in Germany asked us earnestly. She had come to give a talk on the role of different neuronal populations in the pharmacological actions of Delta-9 THC. For most ICRC members, the Holy Grail is a legal synthetic drug that exerts the medicinal effects of the prohibited herb. To this end, they study the mechanism of action by which the body's own cannabinoids are assembled, function, and get broken down. A drug that encourages production or delays dissolution, they figure, might achieve the desired effect without being subject to, quote, abuse. News on the scientific front include the likely identification of a third cannabinoid receptor expressed in the tissues of the lung, brain, kidney, spleen, and smaller branches of the mesenteric artery. Investigators from GlaxoSmithKline and AstraZeneca both reported finding the new receptor, but had different versions of its pharmacology. It may have a role in regulating blood pressure. So this gives more. He gives a more detailed description of what happens at the ICRS meeting. But, of course, the significant impact here is that this group, which is really kind of funded by the anti-marijuana forces or the forces that just want to use marijuana as an extracted drug independent of, you know, the leaf and the buds, has found that marijuana smoking not only doesn't produce lung cancer, but guards against, there's an argument, not confirmed, but there's a reasonable hypothesis, and this even the critics say, that it's a prevention against lung cancer. And now, of course, you know, obviously these are preliminary results, but it's clearly absurd for the Supreme Court to be okaying the finding of federal drug agency, is it the FDA? I'm not quite sure which agency does it, but the agency that finds that marijuana should be Schedule 1 and has no medical benefit. To have the Supreme Court suggesting these contrary-to-fact findings seems to be living in Alice in Wonderland, and, of course, is putting a lot of people in hell because of the fact that they need this medication. And again, come on out on Saturday, noon, at 12 at Cathcart and Pacific if you want to support the WHAM protest. So there. A little music, and I'll be right back. And if you want to join the show and chat, 427-3772.
Sleeping in a pothole, too high to even crawl. After looking in the mirror with contempt for who I see, and throwing life away along with all my identity. After all that I've been through, one thing kept me going. Alive and well.
Alive and well.
Hope is alive and well. After looking at your children, thinking you're less than a man, just knowing you gave up on them, the best things that you had. After hearing from your family that they don't want you to call, just standing in the silence with no reply at all. After all that I've been through, one thing kept me going. From way down in the gutter, I saw a glimpse of light, sending out the message to get me through the night. Even in the darkest corner, hope is alive and well.
Alive and well.
Down underneath the pain, I carry through my...
Yeah, that was a little of In Harmony with the Homeless. And that particular number, I think, was Hope is Alive and Well by Jonathan Cain. And apparently the phone is alive and well. Let's see who's there. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, is this Robert?
It is.
It's Lisa Molyneux.
Oh, the infamous Greenways woman, the first woman to crack the medical marijuana club barrier, perhaps, huh?
Almost. Not quite, but close.
Wow. Were you calling from down south, or?
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone again.
So what's the deal? I heard a message from Mayor Mike that... Indeed, there may be something on the agenda, and I guess I understand that you got some indication of support from him for a permit for your club in the Harvey West.
Well, they were scheduled for a planning commission meeting next Thursday at 7:00 at the city council chambers.
And do you want the public to come to that?
Well, you know, I don't know if that's the step, because it has to go to the city council after that, and that would be the step to go to. And we're shooting for that on the 26th. That's the last meeting before they take a hiatus for the month of August. But I haven't gotten a for sure yet, so I don't know if we're going to make that date. I was told that they have quite a few people trying to get on that agenda because it's the last meeting for 6 weeks. And
right.
Mayor Mike had called and told me that I would be on the agenda. I just haven't had confirmation yet.
So the Planning Commission meeting is going to be Thursday, a week from today, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and the Planning Commission meeting is all about the 40-foot distance. So if there's...
Tell us what that is.
It is a public hearing, so if somebody is interested in coming down and giving support, it would be good.
I don't know if there's
going to be any negative public response, of course, until we get there. So.
Lisa, tell us the issue that you say the 40-foot, clarify that for us.
Well, in the Santa Cruz City Ordinance, it calls out that a playground in a public park or a school or those kind of facilities have to be 600 feet away. And the Harvey West playground area is actually outside of that 600-foot circle, but it was declared by the planning department that the whole park is a playground because it's a baseball diamond and a swimming pool and a... So that made my 600-foot distance, I cross it, I'm short, I'm 560 feet is what it is. I'm 40 feet too close to Harvey West Park.
Well, maybe you could put it 40 feet underground.
I was going to go 40 feet up.
That might work. Yeah.
So the planning department hasn't put it through, they put it through with a neutral recommendation because of the 40 feet. And if the Planning Commission approves the 40 feet, it goes on to the City Council.
Have you had any conversations with Planning Commission members getting any indication of what their sentiment is?
I have not. I have put in a few phone calls, but it's hard to reach me, unfortunately, while I'm working. Because quite often I'm around a live broadcast, and I can't have my phone on.
Have you got a voicemail that people can leave messages on?
They can, yes. I have had some city council members call me back.
All right.
I've talked with Mike Perry quite a bit, and Mike Rodkin, the mayor. And everybody's been very supportive. I've spoke with a couple of the reps from the ACLU, the drug policy reform group, I think, which just moved to Santa Cruz.
And what has been their contribution?
Support, I believe.
Good.
I just have spoke with them recently, but they like the proposal that I'm putting forth to the city, and they feel it's a good proposal.
This would be your first club, right? Or you've never done this before, right?
No, I'm a project manager and a broadcast engineer. So
for Fox News, no.
Fox Sports.
Fox
News, but it's Fox Sports.
You going to give us a special sporty feed from Fox for free radio here?
You need to watch some football or some soccer or something.
Hey, the radio analysis. We could bring you in as a broadcaster.
That's right.
Provided you supplied the collective with the appropriate amount of medical marijuana.
Of course.
Yes. For the tensions of the broadcast world, you know. But
so it actually feels good because I think it's moving forward, and I feel a lot of support behind it. I know that the city council is waiting to give an opinion to see how the public is going to react. So if there's a good response that people feel out there, they should attend and let the city council and maybe the planning commission know that.
Have you had
or call or send an email or do something
to the city council or the planning commission or both?
Both.
Do you have numbers for the planning commission?
Oh gosh, I do.
Okay, because for those of you who are out there who want to see this permit pass, I encourage you to, particularly if you're in the Harvey West area, or even if you're a Santa Cruz person, or even if you're in the Santa Cruz area, because this club looks like it would be serving. One of the few clubs serving this county, as far as I know. I mean, there's Roger Mensch, you know, having been slapped down, fined, and facing criminal appeal. I guess go ahead.
We are hoping the feds will stay away, but you know, we're trying to make this as patient oriented as possible, and hopefully they will recognize that and not try to arrest patients.
Now, you'll be marching at the.
Yes, I will.
In the Wham, dirge or funeral for human rights or the rights of medical marijuana patients or whatever it's going to be on Saturday. Are you going to be speaking at City Hall at the 1 o'clock press conference?
No, I don't believe so. No, I have not been asked. I'm going to attend and support, and I want to speak with Val and Andrea and I think there'll be a couple of attorneys from the ACLU there.
Well, I certainly hope they ask you to speak because while, you know, I'm... It's all really commendable, the work they've done with their 300 people. How many people do you expect to be serving in the first month if you're open?
I don't know. It's a little scary to even think of the prospect, but, you know, because the cards that are in Santa Cruz, it's hard to count because a lot of people go to Oakland to get their actual medical card.
Did you get any figures from Peter Koch or Matt Hilliard, the people who had the Pacific Coast Cooperative open for 6 weeks before the planning department closed it?
Well, they said they had a few hundred patients in the 6 weeks that they were open.
Because I know I've heard from Kate Wells, who worked with two cannabis clubs, that they had thousands of patients.
Well, yeah. If it's the only one in the area, that's very possible. And then we'll be immediately looking for help.
Wow. So give us the number of the Planning Commission so people can call in to demand that you not be allowed to open up.
Oh, well, that'd be a good idea, huh?
Yeah, right.
After all this fighting. I mean, not fighting, struggling, let's call it.
And for those who just tuned in, I am kidding, obviously. I would like to see a massive call-in in support of your permit application.
I know that. I hope they know that, too. I have so many numbers for the city, I don't know which one was actually...
Well, I can give one for the city council, which I always do, and that's 420-5020, and that's actually a number that's working now. So anybody who has a phone who wants to support Greenways, Lisa Milano's, or Mulano, actually, sorry, Lisa.
Well, yeah.
Your application, give a call, 420-5020, and let the city council know you'd like to see that application passed quickly. How quickly can you open if the city council, if the planning commission approves it, and the city council also approves it.
Well, if it all goes through the 26th, it would be a few weeks. I'd probably shoot by the third or fourth week of August, because there's still paperwork that has to take place, and carpets that have to be cleaned. And I haven't spent a lot of money on the building space at this point, because I'm putting out a lot on the lease.
How much is?
And I wanted to make sure I had the permit before they made it look pretty for everybody.
And the lease is about $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good sucking sound coming out of my wallet these days.
Wow. And how long have you been paying this out for?
Well, I've been paying the lease. This would be the fourth month right now. I have to pay it today.
Huh.
And that doesn't include the deposits and, everything I've had to put into this is well close to $40,000 or $50,000 so far.
Well, if they delay it, we can always use it as a homeless shelter area, right?
Hey, okay. That'd be great. I'll be looking for some use if they delay it.
All right. Well, Lisa,
I'm not going to give up. I'm going to hang on to it.
Any report from L.A.? What's happening down there with medical marijuana in the light of Raich versus Ashcroft?
Yeah, I just found out today there's a city council meeting in West Hollywood on Monday evening, which I'm going to attend. I'm so back and forth right now; it's incredible. But they're moving forward with their ordinance in West Hollywood, and they're trying to discuss if they're going to allow edibles in their clubs or their dispensaries, or if they're going to allow clones. Those are the two issues, I think, that are on the...
I'm sorry, edibles and what else?
Clones, baby plants.
So in other words, if you wanted to get a clone or some medical marijuana that you could eat, right now you can't get that in West Hollywood?
You can, and I think they're discussing in the guidelines taking that out.
Oh, they want to remove those things.
They want to remove those things, and so everybody's going to go there and attend and try to... push them towards
what's the rationale for removing them?
The I believe it's the police department that has requested that they don't sell clones, and I think it's much like the Santa Cruz Police Department, where they think the equipment is going to be a fire hazard. In reality, it's not, because clones require very little light, fluorescent light, like a shop light. But edibles, I'm not sure what they're... I think they don't know how to gauge what somebody has if they have edibles. Maybe that's the issue. I don't know why they wouldn't want to make that accessible.
I know
a lot of elderly folks use the edibles.
Is this control freakism run wild? I don't know,
because West Hollywood has been very open about this whole issue.
No, but I mean, why would the police department have any legitimate interest in controlling edibles? I guess they're afraid that they're going to be sold on school campuses to teenagers or something.
They don't know how to gauge it towards the city laws on how much you can have with you.
So their answer is to ban it then.
Maybe. I really don't know, but I plan to attend the city council meeting.
And that's going to be tonight or tomorrow?
No,
or?
That's Monday.
Huh.
That's going to be Monday night. And I will be back in town here Sunday. I have to come back and finish this project I'm working on before I can come home and open our facility.
Well, what's the story with you and edibles and clones? Are you allowed to have clones and edibles in your club?
At this point, we haven't been told that we can't. The police department doesn't want clones in our facility, but the reasoning was the equipment that goes along with that. And my intention is to open the dispensary, get my permit open, and then go back and ask for that permit. Take it one step at a time and not try to force all the issues up front, because
right.
It could delay it.
In San Francisco, or perhaps it's Oakland I'm thinking of, there is currently a club that not only dispenses medical marijuana, but actually dispenses marijuana directly to anyone over the age of 21. Have you heard of that place?
Well, in Oakland?
Yeah.
I think that they just passed their city law that allows that.
Well,
last November.
Right, tax and regulate.
Right, anybody in Oakland could actually purchase it.
Right, but of course the issue, that's commendable. Of course, we shouldn't need a law for this. It should obviously be just a matter of common sense and basic constitutional right. But
the city voted for it.
But that's still against state law. I mean, state law still allows, it still only permits medical marijuana use and doesn't permit, recreational marijuana use. And
I think you're correct.
But I mean, screw state law. As far as I'm concerned, I'm more concerned with, you know, sensible public policy. But what I wanted to ask you about was, because you spend time down in L.A. Does L.A. and that area have any similar clubs open that are open to people simply to come in, and as you can do in Amsterdam and other places in Europe? No, they don't.
Not that I know of, anyway.
Okay.
I didn't even know about the one in Oakland, except for I know that they voted for that last November.
Well, I didn't know that, you know, I know that there's a resolution that urges the, you know, the state to act a certain way and urges a tax and regulate approach at a city level once the state does. But I guess what I had heard also was that a particular club had taken that next step independently of actual legally being explicitly permitted to do so. So
I have spoke about it myself quite a bit. I don't intend to, because, you know, I need to take this one step at a time with the city and the community, because I don't want to overrun anything.
Right, I understand. I'm not necessarily...
I want everybody to be comfortable and understand what it's about as we move forward. But, you know, the state law, the card program is voluntary. Getting the card is voluntary, but most facilities, most dispensaries just demand that you have that card. Or the prescriptions.
But the
way that the state law is written, you really can have a verbal recommendation from your doctor.
Correct. Now, how are you going to be proceeding? Or would it be telling for you to make these statements publicly?
No, because I'm trying. I'm not hiding anything from the city. It has to be all up front. We expect to take the major cards in California, which would be San Francisco, Oakland, Santa Cruz, and also prescriptions. But we have to verify that the first time a client comes in.
What about a verbal recommendation? Will you accept that and verification?
Not yet. That would have to be worked out. Like I said, that's the first time I've heard of a club or a dispensary doing that. And I'm intrigued. I need to go find out what that's about, if they're doing that.
Now,
the law is written that you can do that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just I won't start out that way, because... I want to be community friendly, and, you know, in the beginning everybody's going to be a little bit suspicious and cautious. And
right, of course.
We want to make it as, you know, community friendly as possible.
Now, are you yourself a medical marijuana user? Are you a person who has a condition that...
Yeah.
And what condition is that?
No, mine is cancer. Hell,
wow.
Cancer is what I use it for, but I also have a knee replacement that, you know, I know a lot of people use it for that, but for the pain. But mine is more for nausea and appetite and sleep.
Hmm. Yeah, I've just been reading an article by Fred Gardner on cannabinoids, which I think is also on the Counterpunch website, which describes a report released at the by the U.S. National Institute on, it's by the Cannabinoid Research Society, which is a International Cannabinoid Research Society, which has an annual conference in Florida and gets NIDA, National Institute for Drug Abuse support, which is a conservative U.S. agency, saying that attempts to show any correlation between lung cancer and medical marijuana smoking, and I'm not talking about inhaling through vaporizers, but smoking,
right,
is zero. They have not been able to find that, although, of course, they find a 20-fold connection with heavy cigarette smoking. And they've actually found indications of a preventive effect, strangely enough, through medical marijuana smoking. I don't know why that would be. Maybe cannabinoids have some unusual healing power with respect to lung cancer that hasn't been, you know, confirmed by all studies. And there's, you know, but he says that is, even critics of medical marijuana say that's a reasonable hypothesis in this latest report. So it's interesting. I just read this.
I heard that, actually, and I'm glad that you're talking about it.
Whoops, I'm sorry I had to went through it again with you. But
oh, no, that's good news.
Have you been listening to our show down there in L.A.? Or?
Yeah, actually, on freakradio.org.
Well, you are so patient. Thank you.
Well, you know, I don't know what the radio station is down here. I know that you told me one time.
No, it didn't. Well, you're right.
It's an affiliate or somebody, but anyway.
It is freakradio.org, anywhere outside Santa Cruz, and in Santa Cruz it's 101.1 FM.
Right. So I drove here yesterday. I'm only here for a few days. I fly home tomorrow night so that I can attend the WAM march on Saturday. I fly back here Sunday morning to finish this project. And I fly back Thursday for the Planning Commission meeting, and then
You're just flying
over
the place.
I have to keep paying this bill is the problem. It's killing me.
Now, are people on airplanes allowed to medically marijuana, not with smoking, but with vaporizers? Can they medicate them? I guess they can, theoretically, can't they?
I guess, but I haven't seen anybody do it, but, you know, there's no smoke involved.
I mean, I wonder if people's vaporizers and medicine is being seized as they travel by air. Is that what's your experience with that?
I wonder if they'll make it a pocket-sized vaporizer.
Right, do you know currently what the practice is since you get so thoroughly searched? I haven't actually taken a plane for 10
I've
years.
I've never been searched, to say the truth.
Really? Well, we better make sure you get a quick going over.
I know, I'm going to start knocking on something right now because all my travels all over the world, I've never, ever once been searched.
Huh, but I mean, you know, they search your luggage.
Yeah, I've all kinds of people's luggage.
Have you ever carried medical marijuana with you recently in California?
Oh, in California, carry it, yes, but I don't carry it out of the state.
And have police officers, you know, or have customs officers, whatever, people who search your luggage at airports come across the medical marijuana and said, oh, where's your prescription, or this is fine? What's been the reaction?
No, I have to say I've only had one. Actually, I did have one experience with that. I was flying from San Jose to San Diego.
Huh.
And I had a small amount in a medical jar in my bathroom bag. And she saw something on x-ray. She opened it and looked at it, put it back, and continued on. She didn't even ask me about it.
Good for her.
But I was traveling inside of California.
Right, of course. You know,
So I don't know what would have happened if I had been traveling outside, but I tend to take tinctures and stuff like that if I'm going outside of California.
Well, the answer is if you're a cancer patient, you go outside of California, just be prepared to suffer pain and, you know, and
right.
Nausea. I mean, come on.
Or take some other form of the medicine, which
right.
You can get. It's just, you know, maybe
well,
not
don't you have to be
well
one of
I mean,
you can't get can you get Marinol if you're, you know, unless
you can.
My
doctor
right,
gave
okay.
me a prescription for it so that if I traveled out of California, I could take that with me.
Well, why aren't you satisfied? What is this marijuana club stuff anyway? Come on. Why don't you respect our federal government's problems and priorities? And its wisdom.
First, you have to respect what their opinion is. So I guess I'm not respecting their opinion on that subject.
Well, at least, yeah. We won't even go any further here. We've been talking with Lisa Milano, who's going to be at the Planning Commission at the Santa Cruz City Council Chamber, 7 o'clock a week from today, and then at City Council on Tuesday, the 26th. I guess is it maybe the afternoon, maybe the evening session.
Well,
I'll try to give an update.
It hasn't been confirmed yet, but I was told that because it's such a heavy day and they're going out of for the month of August, it could start as early as 10 o'clock in the morning that day.
Wow. Could be a real early session. I'll be trying to get the advance notice on that and pass the word on to folks out there. And maybe you can post what's happening on Indie Media if you're up for
right.
it.
Right. And what I did hear from Mike Perry is that next Wednesday is the day that the city council puts their
agenda together
for that
yeah.
meeting out.
Definitely.
So we'll have a good idea next Wednesday, and I will either post it on Indie Media or I'll call you.
Okay.
And let you put that out on the air that Thursday night.
And, of course, next Thursday will be the Planning Commission hearing if people want to come and support you there.
Unfortunately, you'll be on the radio, so.
Right, or maybe fortunately, because I don't know how much they
yeah,
like
yeah,
me.
I'll take one in with me.
There you go. You can turn on the radio and I'll be ranting away.
Yeah.
Hey, Lisa, I appreciate your giving us a long-distance report. Please keep us informed and let us be supportive of you, too, because you're doing what nobody has successfully done in 5 years, and if you can do it, do it.
Well, I'm close. I'm hinging. It's all coming down to money almost at this point, but it's all good. I know that it's all going to come together. This whole process has been me waiting for doors to open, and they've opened, and I keep just going through them because they've opened.
Good.
So I'm being led, I believe, so I think it's going to happen, and we're going to have a good facility in Santa Cruz for all the patients.
Is there a number or a way that people can provide their support, either financial, moral, emotional, or otherwise, if they want to? I mean, do you want to leave a phone number where you can be reached, or should I could give my number, and people could leave messages, and I could pass them on to you?
Well, yeah, at this point, I haven't had a number assigned to Greenway, to our building. If I could give you my cell phone, but it is my personal cell phone.
Well, why don't I I have your number. Why don't I, unless you want to, I'll give the Huff line. And people want to get in touch with you and leave messages for you, they can do that at 423-4833, 423-4833. Press the pound key to skip the long message. And I will definitely pass on those messages to you, and we'll take it from there.
And I'm working on getting stuff going this week for phone lines. So as soon as I have a real number that is a Greenway number, I'll call and give that to you.
That's great. Lisa, thank you. Anything else?
That's it.
Cool. See you on Saturday at the rally at noon at Cathcart and Pacific.
Yes, I'll be there. And if anybody else is listening that supports it, come and participate. It always is good to have more.
Definitely. There should be hundreds, if not thousands, of people at this.
That would be good.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think, a march on the Supreme Court decision.
And maybe a word or two to the Santa Cruz City Council to pass your permit and also to change the law so other people can actually open clubs in areas that are even more convenient than off.
Yeah, I believe there's room for more than one, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do need to open it up because it came down to, that's why I'm paying for the building. Everybody wanted that building because it was the closest.
Here, here.
It's not perfect, but it fits everything but that 40-foot distance.
Well, you know, we can't allow that. But again, if you can somehow, maybe you can do a floating thing with a dirigible up there. We could have a rope ladder. You know, that might work.
I'm willing to go up. I'll build up.
You can build up. We could have that 40 stories up. Thanks, Lisa.
All right, Robert.
All right. Cheers. And that was Lisa Molyneux down there in L.A., Greenway's medical marijuana entrepreneur who's looking to get a permit from the planning department, has gotten a neutral recommendation, is going to the planning commission on Thursday, a week from today, 7 o'clock, check her out. And then 2 weeks from last Tuesday, next Tuesday, city council meeting, she'll be there looking for support from the council. Give a call to the council, 420-5020, to support her, 420-5020, and do it now. Why not? It's easy to do. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert?
Yes.
This is Ray Glockrenek.
Hey, Ray. Good to hear you.
Good to hear you also.
Have you been listening to us, or are you just calling in?
No, I'm just calling in. I don't have the radio on.
No problem. I want to just give you a brief intro here.
Okay. And okay.
Yeah, Ray is, of course, you're a former attorney and current legal worker who has been working for years on a number of issues, most recently death penalty issues. But you've also maintained a fondness for the sleeping ban repeal problem that we've been working on for decades. And I know that you gave a presentation last night along with Becky Johnson at the SEIU union headquarters and against some pretty stiff opposition, both from the other, you know, people who want to keep the sleeping ban and all of the camping ordinance in play, and from a lot of skeptical and critical questions from the audience. And that whole forum, we asked to have it recorded. And some of the opponents did not feel comfortable having it recorded.
Actually, I only heard one person objecting, but that was enough because consensus was required.
Right, there was only a couple people, but they didn't want that to happen. Ironically, those same people afterwards spent a lot of time talking with us and seemed to be interested in further discussions, as particularly because they were park rangers and so forth, who had problems with campers, with litter, with environmental degradation, with needles, with all the problems of messy, unclean, and unsafe camping that come along with, I think, with criminalization. But they felt that decriminalizing would actually increase the problem. But why don't you talk about what you discussed last night, and let's start with that, and then we can talk about what your perceptions were of how that whole thing came up, you know, how that proceeded.
Well, I'm going to kind of mush the two topics together, if I may. First of all, I was extremely pleased that SCIU did put it on their agenda. I'm not clear whether it was an SCIU meeting or whether it was a COPE meeting. I think it was probably a COPE meeting.
And the SCIU, of course, is the Service Employees International Union. A lot of those folks are the county,
right.
The
and
city
it may
employees.
Have been the unit of COPE, which is Committee on Political Education, which is the actual blatantly political arm of AFL-CIO, but that only has a voluntary membership because it can't be compelled by union shops. And I think it was a COPE meeting, but at any rate, whichever form it was, officially. I was pleased that they put this thing on the program and that both officially and by far the majority of the audience was seriously tuned in and listening and engaged in the topic. And I say that because the camping ban and issues around the homeless tend to be like the abortion issue. It is so polarized that most people have already a fixed opinion, and that's where they stand, and by God, that's where they're going to stay, and they don't want to listen to anybody else say anything differently.
Let me just say for those rare folks who don't know what we're talking about the city ordinance that criminalizes sleeping between the hours of 11 o'clock in the evening and 8:30 in the morning on any public property, including in your own vehicle, which is even if it's legally parked, and on much private property as well, inside the city limits of Santa Cruz.
Right. And it, even more narrowly than that, the effort that was brought by the proponents, including yourself, of the resolution was to strip out of the current camping ban two of the most onerous and inhumane provisions of it. The one that actually not only prohibits camping, but prohibits actual sleeping between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. And that also authorizes the illegalization of blankets if it's deemed to be potential to facilitate illegal sleeping or camping. So that is known as the sleeping ban. So we have the camping ban more generally, and then we have within that the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. And this was not an attempt in last night's effort to go ahead and try repealing the camping ban, but only to take out these two horrible elements. I see them horrible. And actually, to be fair about it, nobody said, you know, that somehow allowing people to sleep in those hours is a bad thing. The only justification that was put forth, even by the staunchest of defenders of the present law, was that we need this law to somehow help us deal with other problems. That if we somehow don't have these particular provisions in place to keep the rabble in check, that they will find Santa Cruz to be a hospitable place, and they and their ilk will come and override us and flood us, and we will be inundated with a host of other problems.
But the famed magnet effect.
Right.
Which Catherine Byers' City Council's investigatory committee, after 3 months, found was not true, at least as of 1999. And, again, the indications to me are that this isn't true either. And even when I talked to employees of Parks and Rec afterward, at least one of them indicated that he felt that there really wasn't much of a magnet effect. But the problem remained, even among those who aren't, among the many people that aren't coming to town, that a great amount of problems are developed. Problems develop because unless you allow a police officer to approach someone and say, you know, you can't sleep here, you're sleeping, or you're covering up with a blanket, or you're camping, they have no way to deal with these other problems, such as litter, you know, needles.
Even the idea that there are people who were fugitives with arrest warrants out. And it was acknowledged that the camping ban is oftentimes used as a pretext to go ahead and check out poor people to see if they have a warrant, and a significant number of them do because
they've been sleeping.
Poor people,
they've been sleeping illegally.
There was no discussion, and I want to say that there's an example of where a word is used to, you know, when we say somebody has a warrant out, they're a fugitive. The image that is brought to mind is that maybe they're wanted for some dangerous felony, which, of course, in some instances is true. But it's far, far more commonly the case that what they are wanted on is the fact that they have a previous camping fine, that they didn't pay it off, and that they didn't have the bucks to pay it off, and they didn't hang around or take the responsibility to do the community service or whatever. And so the vast majority of warrants are for misdemeanor or infractions, and very basically minor anti-poor stuff
now,
that
gets
escalated
that,
into the process. So they are
well, you
now
say
criminalized.
That, you say that authoritatively, but you don't actually have any stats, do you?
No, no. But I'd like to address the issue of stats, because that's one of the things that happened last night. There was a lot of cross-shouting between the two sides on statistics, and, for example, the defenders of the current ordinance were saying things like, you know, only 1 out of 1,000 is really interested in improving their life, or 1 out of 500, and Becky Johnson was claiming other statistics.
Now, before you continue with this, let me point out the two people who were opposing you were John, who is a park ranger. In fact, I think the only official full-time park ranger, and then a fellow named
for the city.
For the city, and then Andrew, who is also a city worker with.
With the Parks Department.
With the Parks Department, and numerous people in the audience asked some searching and critical questions who were also Parks Department employees.
Correct.
And I mean.
But I just want to point out something on the statistics.
Right, but which I don't think we have, and it's a really important for us to know. I mean, I think the statistics don't tell the whole story, but I would like to see you and these guys who are critics, and you guys seem to be willing. At least they talked to me for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes afterward, and they made the usual, oh, we will work with you on this issue, and I thought, right, you know. But apparently they seem sincerely interested in this issue and sincerely concerned that people who are homeless are facing deprivation at the same time as they're concerned with the problem of, you know, environmental disparagement.
I think that they are serious. They have different thresholds than we do about what to be concerned about, but I want to make two comments on the issue, on the general issue of statistics. First of all, I think the statistics are very important and helpful, and that there are many of the problems that we need to address that could be aided by having reliable statistical information. However, I do not agree that one needs to have a lot of solid, reliable statistical information in order to say no to human rights abuses. I think that there are certain things. I mean, to take this for example, from the homeless to the issue of Guantanamo and the treatment of prisoners at Abu Ghraib, we don't need to have statistics on how often torture works as an interrogation technique to be opposed to torture. It's interesting to have those statistics. It's interesting to know that torture rarely produces reliable information. But before you can prove that empirical fact, a person should be able to say morally, I do not agree to torture, even if in some percentage, some unknown percentage of times, it produces valuable intelligence.
Right.
There are human rights issues which I and other opponents, or at least many of the opponents, most of the opponents of the camping ban, insist trump the subtleties of solid data. However, we don't have most of the people coming with us because they are concerned about these collateral problems.
Well, let me comment on the statistics thing here. Let me comment on the statistics deal. I mean, we're talking about a specific statistic here. I think there are a number of statistics we could exchange. They were passing around pictures of filthy campsites, and these two guys actually had not planned to speak your opponents on the issue. You were just actually, I don't think you had known this was going to be some kind of debate. It was just going to be a presentation,
right?
And then the SEIU would vote on whether to accept it or not. And some other people wanted to turn it into a debate. But the statistics issue for me, at least in terms of the claim that John, the Rangers claim that 1 out of every 2 people has a warrant up there, and that those are misdemeanor and serious warrants. Hang on just a second. Certainly it's independent whether you should let somebody sleep at night, and whether it's a moral tactic to criminalize sleep in order to. But if you had, let's say, an influx of assassins and murderers, or people who are fleeing serious warrants, I would be fine. I'd be interested in that information.
Yes, it is important information. And in fact, there was one source of information that we had last night. There's recently, I think it occurs every year, but it might be every so many years, like every 5 years. They take a very important and I understand, relatively reliable census that is done on Homo spets. And I think Linda LeMaster spoke to that issue. So we were not totally without statistics. But what I want to point out is this, and I want to quote the park ranger's own words on this, not verbatim, but what he was acknowledging. He said that he typically makes his rounds around 9 o'clock after the end of the camping ban. And then he spoke about the campers he runs into and that they were some high number, high proportion of them, and of ne'er-do-wells and dope addicts, and half of them had warrants out, et cetera. I just want to examine that from a statistical standpoint. The legitimate conscientious campers, first of all, most of the campers that are, I don't mean to use the word legitimate because we have outlawed all kinds of campers that are very, very hardworking, decent, clean, conscientious people. Most of the people, for example, who have full-time jobs and who are out there sleeping, they get up before 9 o'clock. They're gone. This is a totally unrepresentative sample. We don't have to make liars out of these park rangers, these people, in order to say their statistics are unreliable.
Ray, let me say this because we have about 6 minutes left in the show. And I thought here are a couple of, relatively prejudiced or, really.
Yeah, I thought they were prejudiced, but I think they're still sincere, too.
Sure, sincere, but self-interested people who are with a strong, bias about, claiming that, the claim that only 1 in 500 homeless people can be helped, I think is probably A, preposterous, and B, shows a mindset. But, what I found interesting was that in the course of this discussion, you got a lot of critical questions from the audience, too. Your side did.
Right.
You and Becky did. There was this real desire to, there was a desire not to... to find solutions, and you were challenged for solutions, and your answer to that was, well, you want to put your money in social services, or do you want to pay off attorneys who are challenging the sleeping ban in court and cost the city a lot of money in legal fees and court costs in terms of money going to, jailing and so forth. Though actually that's not a city cost in the main. A booking, I guess, is a city cost, but not, most of the costs are county costs.
I think you're right that there's the people generally there. And including people who are very critical of our side.
I think
we're mostly desiring solutions. Yeah. They were not mostly interesting in homeless bashing. And that was refreshing.
I think we have to examine, and you, I think, brought this out very well, because you, you candidly acknowledged the two ranger-related people were talking about how Camp Paradise, the camp that was set up 4 years ago, a homeless running camp by Larry Templeton, was a disaster and a failure, and they talked a lot about their negotiations.
Actually, at certain levels, it was. There were
right,
a lot of things
right.
that went well.
Right, I did, but I think you acknowledged. I think you got to do what you got to do, and there was no place for anybody else to go. In fact,
right.
So but still, in terms of how it was presented as this idyllic deal, when it was actually a lot of violence, a lot of brutality and authoritarianism at the top, a lot of drug
right.
abuse. Fraud as well, and that doesn't cover it all, but and that covers some of it. And you said we have to acknowledge this.
Right.
We have to take our responsibility, and you took individual responsibility because you were down there at Camp Paradise. You were trying to help out. You were part of the Quaker group that was supportive of Camp
That's
Paradise.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think in the course of your doing that, people in the audience began to listen to you because they are, a number of them, at least five or six, more than that even, came up to me individually afterward to talk to me about, not to argue, but to, to kind of, it's hard to describe. They wanted to find some solutions, and they challenged you for solutions, and they tended to indicate that they would be a part of a process of working out solutions. Now, I don't know. I was looking for a resolution from the SEIU against this obvious human rights
right.
abuse, the
right.
sleeping ban. And what we got was, they adopted this notion by the homeless health care project worker, Matthew, I think his name is, or Nathaniel.
Yeah, he's a public health nurse.
Public health nurse guy that, let's not vote. This is probably going to be voted. We're going to vote in favor of the sleeping
ban.
He
was very, very nervous that SEIU would be tarred with the brush of conscience. controversy by lining up with us.
Right.
And he may, politically in the short run, he may be right. But we are, of course, not just addressing the short run. We're talking about the long run, and we're also talking about the moral issue.
Right. I think he was also concerned about being tarred with the brush of being anti-homeless. He doesn't like that idea either. I think there was some concern. People there did not want to be perceived as anti-homeless.
Well, he did comment. He said he is personally embarrassed by living in a city that outlaws sleeping.
Yes,
so
he did say
he
that.
He made it clear that he feels revulsion toward this ordinance. He only was concerned about whether it's politic to go on the record as an organization saying so.
We've been talking with Ray Glock-Grunick, and unfortunately, we're out of time.
Okay, I just wanted to say, carry on, and one last thing, a little bit off topic. I just want to remember our friend John Stewart, who I understand has died. And I first of all heard of John Stewart as being part of the anti-psychiatry movement, and where he would rally around various folks who were having their issues of liberty involuntary mental health.
Ray, before you give this memorial to John Stewart, I am out of time. We were planning to do an hour on John Stewart on Sunday, and if you can't, you know, come on Sunday. I'm asking people who remember John Stewart to give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4823, and give their commentary there, and I can play it back, because right now I've got no time left.
Okay, thank you, and good night.
Thank you, Ray. Bye-bye. And I should have announced, and I did not tonight, that there is actually another meeting going on, and I think it's still going on, and it is, maybe it's over by now or partially over. There's a meeting of the NOLO Neighbors. Neighbors of Lower Ocean. They're meeting at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, have since 7 o'clock, and they're meeting on the issue of this Hidden Cove housing project, which if anybody's interested in checking out what's going on, check out this meeting, and because there's still some of it will still be happening. And again, I'm trying to make sure I give the exact time. It starts at 7 p.m., and it has to do with... some neighbors are objecting to a low-income housing project at the corner, I think it's of Barson and the street that's directly adjacent to the river, I believe, right next to the San Lorenzo River. And there's some interesting discussion on it, and maybe I can get an update from Linda LeMaster if she went to it on Sunday when I come back. Right now, my time is up. I want to thank you for listening to this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Tune in again next Sunday at 9:30. And that's in 4 days, and I'll be back in the morning. We can talk some more. Leave a message between times on the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Check out the support for the rights of people to use marijuana at noon on Saturday at Cathcart and Pacific. And, again, I think U.S. Out of Iraq protesters will be downtown at 4, 5 o'clock at Ocean and Water Streets and possibly at the Brant's 40 Overpass. Check Indie Media, www.santacruz.indiemedia. Censorship of Becky Johnson notwithstanding, for more information on all this stuff. And thank you very much for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'll be back. Beyond the shadows of my doubt, inside my heart is love that managed to survive. About it, always staying high. After coming down to love and left, wishing you could die. After life behind these bars, inside a prisoner in jail, I beg for one more chance, oh Lord, I promise I won't fail. After all I've been through, after all I've been through, hope is alive and well.
Alive and well.
Hope is alive and well.
Ooh. Who knows what that was? Maybe Robert knows what that was. Anyway, I'm your Uncle Dennis. You are, of course, listening to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and 70s. I'll be here till 11 o'clock. Bye, Robert. And just whatever. Oh, yeah. You are, of course, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, www.freakradio.org. And for all of those out there who are in a kind of a hotter climate than we are, it's going to be a cool show tonight.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.